Welcome to Hebraic Insights in the Gospels. Join us every Sabbath on Zion Road Radio for a look at the life, deeds, and words of Yeshua Messiah and his followers from the Torah-centric Hebraic perspective they were originally lived and written in. Today's program is on Luke chapter 15. Please get out your Bible and follow along. What do the scriptures prophesy about the remnant of Israel? And how are the parables that Messiah spoke in Luke 15 related to those prophecies? How does the parable of the prodigal son compare to the history of the nation of Israel? If you look at the parable of the prodigal son as relating to Israel, who is the prodigal son? And who is the older son? Could God's promises to the remnant of Israel in these last days possibly apply to you? Who will seek the remnant out and cause them to return? Could it be that God is calling you to come home? Stay tuned throughout today's program for Eliyahu ben David's insight on these questions and more in Luke chapter 15. And now, here's Eliyahu ben David.
Stand at the crossroads and look. Ask for the ancient paths. Ask where the good way is. And walk in it. And you find rest for your soul.
You know, for the best part of two decades, Zion has been putting out the message that it's time for the people of Yahweh to come home. We're going to hear this message the very best way we possibly can from Yeshua Messiah himself in Luke chapter 15. And certainly we have such a welcoming message from him for all of his scattered sheep. He said a certain man had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me my share of your property." He divided his livelihood between them. Well, this is the parable of the prodigal son, very well-known parable, pointing out many principles that help us to understand the very loving nature of our Father, helping us to understand that even when someone goes astray, if they turn back, they have a home in their Father's arms. And this is probably the most important part of the message for every person who reads this parable. It is a call to come home. It is meant to be reassuring to people that have taken a wrong turn. And sometimes, you know, if you're one of those people that's out there looking to eat up the pig's will, you just might come to your senses and realize it's time to go home. But you might think, maybe I'm not going to be welcome. And this parable shows us that isn't true. And where there's life, there's hope. And if you want to go home, the door is open. But, you know, in these parables, I have been pointing out that there is also a deeper level. In many of these parables, for the remnant. And that's true of this particular parable. So I want to just focus now on that aspect of this parable so that we could look at the deeper level of what this means for the remnant. And we'll compare this parable to the actual history with which Yeshua Messiah was familiar, with which all his listeners were familiar, as well as the prophetic picture, and see if it clearly fits what we find there. So we see we have a man with two sons, and his younger son wants to get his share of the property. And so the man divides what he's got between the two sons. Now, the other son didn't ask for it. He didn't ask for it to be divided. But the father is doing this at the request of the younger son. Did anything like this ever happen with Israel? Well, take a look at this. Israel started out as one nation with 12 tribes. But 10 of the tribes began to chafe under the leadership of the house of David and Judah. And so they broke away from Judah. Of course, Israel was the covenant land. They wanted their share. But not only did they break away from Judah, unfortunately, they broke away from Yahweh, and they broke away from the covenant. I summarize it here like this: on the succession of Solomon's son, Rehoboam, 10 tribes of Israel demanded their own inheritance. They split from the ruling tribe of Judah into a new kingdom, the kingdom of Israel in the north, leaving the kingdom of Judah in the south. So the land of Israel is really the inheritance that Yahweh gives to his nation under the covenant. They wanted their share. They separated away into another kingdom. And then they partied like it was 1999. They turned away from Yahweh. Not many days after, the younger son gathered all of this together and traveled into a far country. There he wasted his property with riotous living. So they started doing that pretty much immediately on forming their own kingdom. They stopped worshiping completely at the temple of Yahweh. They set up Baal worship in cities in their territory. And the Baal worship certainly can be described as riotous living, like the pagans. And really, actually, they were worse. They were worse. So then what happened is what it explains in 2 Kings 17. Israel rejected his statutes, that is Yahweh's statutes, and his covenant, and they followed vanity and became vain, and followed the nations that were around them, concerning whom Yahweh had commanded them that they should not do like them. They forsook all the commandments of Yahweh. They didn't leave any out, friends. They broke them all. And made them molten images, even two calves, and made an Asherah, and worshipped all the army of the sky, and served Baal. This is about as far away from Yahweh as Israel could get. It's like not only not obeying Yahweh, but disobeying in every way that matters. So that's what they did. Well, 2 Kings 17:6 goes on saying what happened as a result. In the 9th year of Hoshea, the king of Assyria took Samaria and carried Israel away to Assyria and placed them in Hala and on the Habor, the river of Gozan, and in the cities of the Medes. So the 10-tribe kingdom was removed to a far country, the country of Assyria. And how often does this happen? Amazingly, Assyria deported the entire population off of the land. Everybody, the 10 tribes, totally removed from their homeland in Israel and transplanted to the southern shores of the Caspian Sea. From there, they were scattered throughout all the nations where since then they have been assimilated. Very, very similar to the prodigal son, isn't it? They were as far away from their father as they could get, as far away from the land as they could get, scattered throughout the nations, they partied on. Ezekiel 20:23 kind of tells us what happened. It says, "As for you, house of Israel, thus says Adonai Yahweh, go serve everyone his idols. And hereafter also, if you won't listen to me, but my holy name you shall not profane with your gifts and with your idols." So you see, Yahweh said, okay, if that's what you want to do, I can't stop you. Go ahead and do it. But I'm not going to let you profane my name. So they had to be removed from the land. They could no longer be called by his name. They could no longer be recognized as his son. Now, they were Gentiles, like every Gentile, like every pagan. That's who they were. Well, what they had in the land, whatever of that they could take with them, soon was used up. Just like the prodigal son here, when he had spent all of it, there arose a severe famine in that country, and he began to be in need. He went and joined himself to one of the citizens of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed pigs. He wanted to fill his belly with the husks that the pigs ate, but no one gave him any. This is life for scattered Israel in the remnant nation. All of the remnant nations. Did I say remnant nations? No. World's nations. The world's nations. There was no remnant nation, in fact. Because what happened was, after they were removed, who we might see as the older brother, they took up similar ways. And they weren't acting according to God's name either. And they too were removed from the land, but only temporarily, only as an instructive measure to turn them back around. And then they ended up coming back. A remnant of them ended up coming back. And of course, that's how things were at the time Yeshua gave this parable. They were still in the land and had been now for over 400 years. But as for the other son, look at them. They're completely reduced to being under the domination of the Gentiles. That's what working for the citizens here and feeding pigs is about. This is talking about these people who had been clean under the covenant, and now they're living in this unclean condition where they're even lusting after eating pig's will. Basically, all the stuff that the nations throw at us. And I'm one Israelite that's sick of all that garbage. How about you? This is in harmony with what Yahweh had said through Moses when they first were going into the land of Israel. The land of Israel, friends, and living in it is conditional. It's conditional upon keeping the commandments and the covenant of Yahweh. And in Deuteronomy, it sets that out, and this is just a little part of it. Here's what Yahweh says. Yahweh will scatter you among all peoples from the one end of the earth, even to the other end of the earth, and there you shall serve other gods, which you have not known, you nor your fathers, even wood and stone. Among these nations you shall find no ease and shall have no assurance of your life. This is so often how it is for remnant people. It's not easy living out among the Gentiles. And the reason is, even if you think you're one of them, you're not. And it's just more difficult for people who actually are of Israel, whether they know they're of Israel or not. And as it says here, they shall have no assurance of their life. It's very chaotic and iffy. And you know, these people are often called the afflicted in the scriptures. Has that been your experience in the world? Those of you who know that you're of Israel, do you find the nations of the world providing an easy place for you to live? I don't feel like I belong in any of these Gentile nations. And I never have fit, even before I knew I was of Israel. And I think there's a lot of people who are like me, and maybe this is one thing that could be a hint to some of us of who we really are. Ezekiel 22. Ezekiel talks to the 10-tribe kingdom. He says, I will scatter you among the nations and disperse you through the countries, and I will consume your filthiness out of you. You shall be profaned in yourself in the sight of the nations, and you shall know that I am Yahweh. How is that knowing that he's Yahweh? Well, it comes to you kind of like this, okay? If you're dispersed among the nations, you're out there and you're on your own doing the things the nations do. And yet what happens? You come to a place where you're empty and pitiful and you've got nothing. And the nations look at you and they think you're pitiful too. Then you discover the scriptures were right. You discover there is another way. You discover this is what Yahweh said would happen all along. And then you come to know Yahweh. Well, when he came to himself, he said, how many hired servants of my father's have bread enough to spare, and I'm dying with hunger? I will get up and go to my father and will tell him, Father, I've sinned against heaven in your sight. I'm no more worthy to be called your son. Make me as one of your hired servants. You know, a servant in the house of Yahweh is better than a son in the house of the world. You look at what they really have. They have money. Some of them have big houses and lots of wealth. What happens to all of that? Well, Yeshua told us about that. They build their bigger barns and fill it all up with all their stuff. And then they say, oh boy, now I'm going to relax and enjoy my life. And they don't even know that Yahweh is going to call them, and all of that's going to somebody else. They've got nothing. They have vain lives. That's what the world has got. And why is it that sometimes the people of Yahweh actually covet that stuff? They actually leave Yahweh so they can have the stuff. They think all that glitz they see, all of that, is worth pursuing. But when you actually do pursue it, like, say, for instance, Solomon did, if you have any wisdom, you come to a place after a certain point of time when you say, hey, this is just all vanity. This is the wrong direction. And that is what Yahweh had in mind when he said, okay, go ahead, take your inheritance and go. Because he knew that when you follow that path and you get to the end of that path, if you're honest with yourself, you say there's nothing there. Nothing. It's all just vanity. And then you turn around and you start to realize being the most lowly person in Yahweh's house is far better than being a billionaire in the world that doesn't know Yahweh. Absolutely the truth. So here is the prodigal son out there wanting to eat garbage, just thinking about what's going on back home with the servants, eating good food every day. Not fancy food necessarily, not necessarily the kind of food that they could eat, but eating good food every day, being filled, having everything they need. And he's thinking, oh, I'd like to be one of those guys right now. Zechariah 10:9, I will sow them among the peoples, and they will remember me in far countries. And they will live with their children and will return. You know, that prophecy has never been fulfilled. Part of it has. They were sowed among the peoples. And today, some of us are remembering him in far countries. If that wasn't true, we couldn't have Zion Academy, because we have people from many far countries that come and participate because they have remembered him and remembered who they are. But this other part has only partially happened. They will live with their children and will return. It's talking here about teshuva, turning around. But you see, it's returning in two senses. One is returning to our Father in our heart, which involves returning to our true identity as Israel. But the other thing, the other part of this, where this takes us, is to return to our land, receiving back our inheritance. And that can only come as a miracle. So it tells us he arose and went to his father. Look what it took to get him to go back to his father. He was lusting after pig's will. And finally, it dawned on him, I need to go back to my father. Doesn't it take that sometimes? I know that we have some people, no doubt, who have come to this ministry, who have had that experience, you know, who turned away and went after the big swell of this world, and then later thought better of it and decided to return to their father. Hosea 3, 4 through 5, for the children of Israel shall live many days without king, without prince, without sacrifice, without sacred stone, without ephod or idols. Afterward, the children of Israel shall return and seek Yahweh, their Elohim, and David, their king, and shall come with trembling to Yahweh and to his blessings in the last days. Could it be any plainer than that? Why is it that so many Bible-believing people of all different stripes somehow have missed this? Somehow they don't see this. Sometimes they spiritualize it. Somehow this becomes the church in their mind. Sometimes it becomes an allegory of some kind. But when you know the history of what happened with Israel, how can you look at this as anything but a prophetic promise from our Father? That's what it is. And it describes exactly what has happened for over 2.5 millennia. Think of that. 2.5 millennia. That's why they call them the lost tribes. Basically, they've been put in a blender with the rest of mankind, and the button was pushed on high. They're scattered everywhere. So, you know, so many people think, well, I couldn't possibly be of Israel because I'm this, I'm that. I'm from here, I'm from there. That's wrong. Doesn't matter where you are. You could be of Israel. And if you're listening to this, you probably are of Israel, because why else would you be listening to this, right? Look at just how thoroughly they would become assimilated. No more Israelite king, no more prince. In other words, no more government, no more order whatsoever. That's all gone. That's something that holds together a people, a nation. It's all gone. And then it mentions sacrifices, and even their idols that they lusted after, all gone. They have no common thread of spirituality of any kind holding them together. And yet, the miracle that only Yahweh could do, it says, afterward, the children of Israel shall return. So this is like many generations after the time that they left. And yet they will return and seek Yahweh, their Elohim, and David, Messiah, their king, and shall come with trembling to Yahweh to his blessings in the last days. That's a miracle. What is that if it's not a miracle? How is that even possible to happen? I would never believe it if Yahweh hadn't said it. I do believe it because he did say it. He arose and came to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was moved with compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. How much does your father love you? You know, a lot of us have a real problem today because the culture has been so messed up. A lot of us really don't even know how to receive love. I think sometimes it's because deep down inside, maybe we think we don't deserve love. I think the prodigal son might have felt after this great sin he had committed against his father and what he had done and how he had treated him, that while he's returning to his father, he might be worried that his father's not going to accept him. But look what his father did, you see. The father saw him a long way off and ran out to him. Isn't that what our father does? You know, if we're estranged from our father and we just make the least movement in his direction, I'm telling you, he's going to be right there. I think most of us can't even imagine how much he truly does love us. But he also honors our right to make our own decisions. He's given us free will, and he actually lets you exercise it. And so it is up to you, and you do need to make that move in his direction. But as soon as you do, he's right there to help you every step of the way. That's who he is. That's who he is. He has seen us a long way off. Now I'm talking about the remnant. He saw us when we left 2.5 millennia ago. He spoke through Jeremiah. Yahweh, save your people, the remnant of Israel, Jeremiah says. And Yahweh says, behold, I will bring them from the north country and gather them from the uttermost parts of the earth, and with them the blind and the lame, the woman with child and her who travails with child. A great company shall they return here, here meaning Israel. They shall come with weeping and with petitions will I lead them. I will cause them to walk by rivers of waters in a straight way in which they shall not stumble. For I am a father to Israel, and Ephraim is my firstborn. He is our father. He saw us a long way off. With the wisdom of a father, he knew what had to happen. He knew we had to follow that rabbit hole. And we did. But he knew eventually some of us would come to our senses. And when we were ready, he would be ready. Truly a wonderful father. Well, then we have this amazing moment. The son said to him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son." Is that true? Boy, is it ever true. We do not return to the Father because we think we're worthy. We're far removed from those people that left him. Many of us, you know, we're just children of the Gentiles. We don't even know him. Many of us who are of Israel. We don't have any basis in ourself on which we have a standing before him. So no, we're not worthy to be called his son. Don't you think it's good to know that? If you didn't know that, how could you repent? Not only on behalf of yourself, but on behalf of your fathers before you who sinned against him. Why would you repent? We don't have a standing because we've been so great, because we haven't been so great. But you notice how the father reached out to his wayward son. And that broke the heart of the son to admit this to his father. I think that happens for the remnant. I think Yahweh comes to us with such love, such caring, such forgiveness for us, so totally open, so non-judgmental, that it actually takes us aback and it breaks our heart, as it should. And it makes us have an earnestness within to want to turn around, though maybe we haven't acted like the sons and daughters that we were meant to be. It creates in us a desire to change. Isaiah 10:21-22 says, "A remnant will return, even the remnant of Jacob, to the mighty Elohim. For though your people, Israel, are like the sand of the sea, only a remnant of them will return." So this helps us to understand what's going to happen, what is in fact happening, that not all who are descendants of Israel are going to do what the prodigal son does here. Only a remnant will return, but it will be a mighty remnant, really a huge number of people, and a returning is happening. We're going to see this hugely over the next decade. It's going to be astounding what we're going to see happen. And hopefully those of us who are here at Zion will have educated ourselves enough, learned enough from Yahweh about these truths, that we can be here to assist all of those folks that are going to be wondering, well, what is really going on? What is this really all about? What do I need to do now? And you know, we've been building up a vast library of materials for people, haven't we? That we can point them to, and we can all be ready to help them. But the father said to his servants, "Bring out the best robe and put it on him. put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet. Bring the fattened calf, kill it. Let us eat and celebrate, for this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. They began to celebrate. You know, in the book of Ezekiel, it shows all these dry bones. That's these people, right? Israel, scattered Israel out there, essentially dead and buried. Essentially dead and buried. Coming to life again. That's something that Yahweh wants to celebrate. You know why? Because Israel is the apple of his eye. Israel is the apple of his eye. His love for Israel is so great. All that matters is that they're coming home. You know, I have some estranged children. That's just how I feel. I don't really care what they've done. Doesn't matter. I just would like to see them come through my door. That's just how our Father expresses himself here in this parable. And it's kind of overwhelming. I mean, I think the return of this prodigal is kind of amazing, don't you think? Here he's just looking for something a little better than pig's well. And this is so lavish, it's just outrageous, isn't it? It's just amazing. Why? Why all of this lavish outpouring? His returning son needs to know he's loved that much, that it's real, that he's really home now, that he's got everything back again that belongs to him. He knows he doesn't deserve it, but he's got to know this to be able to come home and to function as a son. So the father pours all this out. Now let me tell you something. It won't be long, a few years. And we're going to see this happen on a grand scale. And we're going to see many of the remnant coming back. And it's going to happen. And there's going to be a great celebration. Yahweh is going to pour out blessings on his remnant that are really going to shock the socks off of everybody. Especially us. Especially the returning remnant. It's going to knock us out, the blessings that Yahweh wants to pour out on the returning remnant. That's really what's going to happen. And it's going to be an amazing thing, and it's going to be such a celebration. It will catch the notice of people. Zechariah 10:6 says this, I will strengthen the house of Judah, and I will save the house of Joseph, and I will bring them back, for I have mercy on them, and they will be as though I had not cast them off. For I am Yahweh their Elohim, and I will hear them. You know, there's going to be none of this thing that you've done the wrong thing, and we'll let you back. But you have to realize you're like a second-class person here. Because these other people, you know, they've been sticking with it all along. You messed up, so you're going to be in this second-class place. That's not Yahweh's heart. It should not be our heart. When Yahweh forgives somebody, they're forgiven. It is over. And really, believe me, friends, we should not be bringing up stuff that people did back whenever. Are they walking with Yahweh today? That's the question. Not what somebody did, right or wrong, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. What we see happening in the world today, where, you know, we see stuff in the news of people doing like minor offenses when they're in high school, being brought up after many, many years. This is not the heart of our Father. He does not behave like that. What he's going to do with a remnant, they will be as though they had never been cast off. That means all the blessings of the covenant that you find outlined in Deuteronomy, which are huge, are going to be restored to the remnant. And none of us had anything like that level of blessings in our life out scattered in the world. It is such a level of richness just to have it exist anywhere on planet Earth in the last days is going to be a wonder to behold. Trust me on this. I know what I'm telling you. It's truly amazing what is going to be happening. Now his elder son was in the field. As he came near to the house, he heard music and dancing. He called one of the servants to him and asked what was going on. He said to him, "Your brother has come and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has received him back safe and healthy." I like a good steak. How about you? It's not something you get every day. But, you know, when you have that steak, you feel like you're really eating something, right? And imagine that son who is lusting after pig's will looking at this. I'm thinking that looked pretty good to him. And not only was he getting it, but all of his friends in the household, they were all participating. They're all getting it too. Blessings being poured out. Just amazing. All because he was received back. So the brother comes along and sees all this. And wasn't real happy about it. Now, do you think he could have walked up to the table and got himself a nice big steak and a salad and whatever else is there? Do you think he could have listened to the music? Do you think he could have participated? Is there anything there that he couldn't have just as much as the other brother had? Not a single thing there he couldn't have. It already was available to him. After 2.5 millennia, a faithful remnant of Israel has returned to the Father. Surely a celebration is in order. But wait, not all are happy to have them back. Wow. Here's a part of the picture we might not have thought about. When the remnant of Israel are brought back, we have this big celebration, we have all these blessings, there are going to be people who definitely are not going to be happy about that. He was angry and would not go in. Therefore, his father came out and begged him. Well, who could this be? Certainly, it could be some religious Jews who think it's just all about the Jews now. And then they have the remnant come back with these 10 other tribes, that might kind of, disrupt the system somewhat. And they might not be too happy about that. There might be some people in the Christian church who feel like, well, gee, I've been serving God all along. And yet, you know, our denomination is just struggling. And here there's this huge outpouring on these people. They might not be very happy about that. There might even be some messianic believers. And they might look at these folks and say, wow, I mean, they're doing this different. They're not really doing these Jewish things. They're different here. They're different there. And yet, we've been doing all of that other stuff, but they're getting all of this blessing. They might get mad at that. There might be really quite a few people who aren't happy with what Yahweh has in mind. Even though the Father is begging them to join in. And you know that's exactly what will happen, right? He answered his father, "Behold, these many years I've served you, and I never disobeyed a commandment of yours." Yeah, like that's true. "But you never gave me a goat that I might celebrate with my friends. You haven't respected me, Father. You've just taken me for granted. But when this, your son, came, who has devoured your living with prostitutes," oh, what a horrible person, "you killed the fattened calf for him." It's almost like his father is sinning now. Right? His father is condoning prostitution. And then notice he says, "your son." He doesn't say, "my brother." It's your son. What do you think is the motive behind this? Do we ever feel like this? Be honest. When you see somebody else receiving a blessing you'd like to get, but you didn't get it or you don't feel like you got it? Can you possibly even become hostile towards this other person the way this brother obviously was? I like to look for things like this as we go through and listen to Messiah, because you know, this is the time for us to be repenting. And some of us, sometimes we've picked up some of these kinds of ways of thinking out there. And we really need to change this kind of thinking. We really need to. Because really, shouldn't he have been glad that his brother came back? Shouldn't he be happy that his brother has changed? But, you know, he's not even acknowledging that his brother has changed. He's totally against his brother. And why? Well, it's about his status, right? As you read that clearly, he's saying, "My status has fallen in your eyes." That's what this means. I'm somehow being demoted because these blessings are being given to my brother and not to me. That's what he's thinking. Well, that's what we're going to get from some people. When all these things transpire, the remnant returns, we have this huge outpouring, we're going to get a lot of this. And let's hope that we can act better than that. Let's hope that we can have some understanding of where those folks are coming from and do our best to reach out to them to try to close that gap. Because, you know, this goes two ways. If this younger son is this man's brother, then this man is the brother to that younger son, right? So, you know, we have to have respect for others. We have to have respect for what they have done. I think, for instance, of the Jewish people who have reclaimed the land of Israel, they went ahead and they got it done. And they fought the wars. Mothers lost their sons. They have just taken a huge amount of abuse. They have been hated by many throughout the world. They are misrepresented as racists and oppressors. And the list goes on and on of what they have gone through to return and to reclaim that land. And I believe when we return to that land, we need to respect that because they've earned that respect. That's really important that we do that. And they have done something that we didn't do. Just like this son was there with his father all along, helping his father. Well, they've been there in Israel all along, helping to reclaim the land. You know all those prophecies about how it's all a desert and it's all going to come back? They did that, not us. So we need to have respect for that, even if maybe they're upset with us at first. Let's hope we can turn them around by treating them the right way. So what did Yahweh say? Well, he said, "Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours." It's true. Under the covenant, Yahweh's given us everything. But it was appropriate to celebrate and be glad, for this your brother was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. A whole nation lost. What nation has ever come back after 2.5 millennia and being scattered throughout all the world? If that's not something to celebrate, I really don't know what you would celebrate. That's just such an amazing thing. So who is this other son? Well, we've talked about it somewhat. I think it boils down to religionists, people, whether Jews, Christians, whatever they may be, messianics, who feel that they have done everything that God wanted, now have kept his commandments. And while this is probably, I think pretty certainly, not true, because nobody keeps his commandments perfectly, why did God give Israel atonement in the first place? Isn't it because we need it? But nevertheless, there are people who feel like they have really spent their whole life being righteous people, who covet the position they're in, who will not welcome what's going to happen with the remnant. And I don't think it's too early to start praying for those people. And perhaps Yahweh can turn the hearts of many of them before we return home. Because we really do want to be part of a family. And we want them to be part of the family too. And we want to promote peace with our family. Well, we have the parable about the woman who lost the coin. Interesting that she had 10 coins. Reminds us of the 10 tribes. When she found it, she calls together her friends and neighbors, saying, "Rejoice with me, for I found the drachma which I lost." I think this could very well be other Jewish people who actually will be very glad about the lost tribes coming home, who will be excited about it. Because, you know, this is something that you find in all of the rabbinical literature out there. They all talk about the return of the tribes. They know it's a fact. They know it's going to happen. Josephus talked about it too. And not only that, but they believe that it's going to happen as a sign of the soon coming of the Messiah. So, really, many of them may be very glad to see the lost tribes returning and will rejoice over the return of those tribes. And then we think again of the man who lost the sheep. Reminds us of our father. Jeremiah 31, speaking about the remnant, says, "He who scattered Israel will gather him and keep him as a shepherd does his flock." Wonderful promise. Doesn't matter where you are. Doesn't matter how distant you may be around the world. I may not be able to find you, but Yahweh will find you. And he will gather you, and he will keep you, because you are his sheep, and he loves you.
You have been listening to Hebraic Insights in the Gospels. Some of the scripture verses referenced in today's program are 2 Kings chapter 17, verse 6, and verse 15 through verse 16. Ezekiel chapter 20, verse 39. Deuteronomy chapter 28, verse 64 through verse 66. Zechariah chapter 10, verse 9, Hosea chapter 3, verse 4 through verse 5, Jeremiah chapter 31, verse 7 through verse 10, Isaiah chapter 10, verse 21 through verse 22, and Zechariah chapter 10, verse 6. Further teachings and study materials on more verses about the remnant of Israel throughout the Bible, Yeshua as the rightful King of Israel, the Davidic Covenant, the Zion Mission, who the remnant of Israel is, why God's everlasting covenant with Israel is not done away with, why the Torah is still relevant to the remnant of Israel as part of keeping that covenant, what the Torah actually teaches instead of what doctrines of men say it teaches, how God will restore the remnant of Israel to their identity and bring them back home in the remnant Exodus, why it is necessary for the remnant of Israel to reunite in the order that Messiah set up before the remnant Exodus, the tribes of Israel and their function within God's nation, the order of the leadership of Israel that Messiah established when he came, how the 144,000 in Revelation chapter 7 will operate according to that order, the role of the remnant of Israel in overcoming the enemy in the last days, and how you can be a part of Yahweh's remnant nation, along with many other related topics, can be found at our membership site, Zion Tabernacle. Sign up is free. Just go to zion.net. That's TSIYON.net. New programs on the Gospels will be airing every Sabbath on Zion Road Radio. Tune in next Shabbat to learn more from Hebraic Insights in the Gospels. Shabbat Shalom!
Stand at the crossroads and look. Ask for the ancient paths.
I love Yahweh.
The Christian church system has claimed that Israel is cast off and done away with. However, Jeremiah chapter 31, verse 35 through verse 37 says, "Thus says Yahweh, who gives the sun for a light by day, and the ordinances of the moon and of the stars for a light by night, who stirs up the sea so that its waves roar. Yahweh of hosts is his name. If these ordinances depart from before me, says Yahweh, then the seed of Israel also shall cease from being a nation before me forever. Thus says Yahweh, if heaven above can be measured, and the foundations of the earth searched out beneath, then will I also cast off all the seed of Israel for all that they have done, says Yahweh. The sun is still here. The sea still roars, and the stars still shine." Learn how Yahweh's nation Israel is literally written in the stars as a permanent testimony of our God's commitment to his covenant with Israel. Visit our community site, Zion Tabernacle, and sign up as a free member to view Eliyahu ben David's seminar entitled One Nation Written in the Stars. Now available free of charge as part of Zion Fast Track, our introductory video course. Zion Fast Track will give you the big picture of what God is doing with his remnant nation in this very generation. To sign up and learn more about what other free resources you'll get as a Zion Tabernacle member, go to zion.org and click Join Us. That's TSIYON.org. Then click Join Us.
I love Yahweh. He heard my cry. He rescued me in my darkest time.